This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Turn up your volume.
Because you're about to listen to
The Sick Podcast.
With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the bomb!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne chose! Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Friday, May 19th. 10:01 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the Sick Podcast brought to you by La Bita TV, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. La Bita TV offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. La Bita TV, embrace your true nature. Also brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, who were recently named by Deloitte and CIBC as one of Canada's best managed companies, the country's leading business award, which recognizes innovative and world-class companies. The best managed Canadian companies designation fuels Energy's purpose of creating progress for their customers, their employees, and communities. Join a winning team and check out Energy's career page for available opportunities, and brought to you apart by XL Moto and XLMoto.com at 5480 Paré, the premier motorcycle and scooter dealership in Montreal for over 20 years. In my opinion, the only place to buy a Vespa scooter in Montreal, or the best place. They carry 7 different motorcycle and scooter brands. Number one Aprilia and Piaggio ambassadors for the last 5 years in North America, just ahead of Miami, by the way. XL Moto, your ultimate destination and best customer service experience. Go see my buddies Ali and Vito, and they will take care of you, I am certain. What a crazy day it was today in the National Hockey League. Crazy. We got so much to talk about. We really do. I bring in from the Montreal Gazette and Hockey Inside Out, Stu Cowan. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Who's become somewhat of a regular on Fridays. But Stu is as reliable as they come. As long as the Canadians aren't playing, you want him on Tuesdays there. You want him on Mondays there. Whichever day you want him, he's there. And even when you text him about an hour and a half before the show, or even less than that, he's there. And Stu, as you know, that is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Tony.
Stu, I knew something was like off when Kyle Dubas was talking the way he was talking a couple of days ago. And it was sincere. That it was a very difficult year for him and his family. It's very taxing. It takes a toll. But that he didn't even know if he wanted to be back And if he wasn't going to be back, he wasn't going to another club, and he was going to take a sabbatical. I did not expect, however, the Toronto Maple Leafs to send out a press release today at 12:22 in the afternoon saying that they had parted ways with Kyle Dubas, calling for a 3 p.m. press conference on a Friday afternoon of a long weekend when most media outlets, probably packed it in at around noon and started their long weekend. As a matter of fact, Brendan Shanahan apologized for doing it today and calling everyone in for a press conference at around 3 o'clock because it was a long weekend. And then he gave us information, and he gave us a lot of information. Let's listen in on Brendan Shanahan, three different audio clips that we cut up.
When a general manager is playing out the last year of his contract, there's always the possibility of a contingency that you might need a new general manager. He might choose to go to another team. And I think that I felt I had gotten a little bit closer and felt some indications that we were going to work this out. I would say after the press conference on Monday, I was less sure. And I thought there is a real possibility that he might not want to do this and that he might need to, I think, as he said, take a step back. At that point, I hadn't ruled Kyle Dubas out, but I certainly had to make sure that I was thinking of other options as well. Watching Kyle's press, I think at that point, there was a shift in my thinking at that moment, a dramatical shift in my thinking as I drove home that night that, as Kyle expressed, he might not want to be our GM, and I have to take that very seriously. I think we had discussed that certainly it was a concern, not just for Kyle, but just but we're speaking about Kyle specifically. I think we discussed the day before that it was a concern for him. I didn't expect that he was going to go out and put that to the public, but nevertheless, It made it all more real and all more serious, certainly. It presented certainly lots of questions. I have no issue with Kyle's honesty, Kyle's emotions. I think Kyle is an honest person.
All right. There was a lot more to it than that, but let's see if I can sum it up here as best I can. Brendan Shanahan said that last year, at the end of the season, he approached Kyle Dubas, who would be entering the final year of his contract this year, and said, "Listen, Kyle, I cannot extend your contract at this time. I am happy with the body of work that I've seen thus far, but let's play out this season. And if you have my word that if things go relatively well, we'll take into account the last 5 years. And it's my intention to offer you a contract extension at that point." He said that he thought his team had an excellent regular season. He told Kyle during the season that he thought they were having an excellent regular season. He thought that Kyle had an excellent trade deadline. And he said that he told Kyle Dubas that he had an excellent trade deadline. Before the season was over, he said that he told Kyle Dubas that he wanted to already sit down to start putting together the framework for a contract extension and that he was happy with it. And they did that. And then he said, Kyle Dubas told him, "I don't want this to be a distraction. Deal with my agent." He said he dealt with the agent. He said Kyle Dubas had told him at one point that it was taxing on his family. He had told them that. But, you know, they talked about it and they knew it was par for the course. But he said at the end of the year, when it was over, he still told Kyle that although he was disappointed that they got eliminated by Florida, that he still thought that, you know, it was an excellent job was done and that he wanted to bring him back. And you know, but he said, "Kyle, sleep on it because I know you said it was a taxing season." And Kyle sent him an email after and told him, "Yes, I've slept on it. I thought about it," but, you know, less than a week later, and told him, "I want to continue being the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs." So he said then He reached out to the agent again. Then they got back to him. But then he was taken by surprise that Kyle Dubas told the media everything that he told them. And he had told Kyle Dubas, I would rather you don't speak to the media. I'm not going to speak to the media because I'd like to speak to the media when I'm able to announce a contract extension. And I would like it for it to be the same way with you. Kyle Dubas said he told them that he wanted to speak to the media. The players were speaking, the coach was speaking, and he felt he had to speak. So then he went on to mention that he was very surprised that Kyle Dubas told the media everything that he told them. And it got him to thinking that night that, hey, you know what? If Kyle is having this much of a hard time, it's taking a toll on him and his family. I have to really think about maybe life after Kyle Dubas. And he said that he gave it a good night's sleep and he thought about it. And when he woke up in the morning, he realized that the Toronto Maple Leafs had to go in another direction. And so he went to visit Kyle Dubas at his office and told him that they were making a move. Sammy Nagniello, do we have Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star on the line? Do we? Kevin, are you there? No. Okay. I thought, okay. So we're trying to get a hold of Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star. And maybe we're going to get him on a little bit later. All right. Okay. Stu, what's your read of this entire situation?
That was a bizarre news conference today with Shanahan. It was really weird. I tweeted out earlier, if Réjean Tremblay wants to bring back the Lance Comte TV series, there's an episode right there just on what happened today. It seemed like he wanted to bring Dubas back. The other thing that it seemed like they had a contract agreed to, and then Dubas's agent came back and wanted more.
That's right. That's the piece I was leaving out. You're right about that.
Correct. That's when Shanahan sort of said, okay, enough. That's when he figured, I got to make a change. Because Shanahan, Shanahan wanted to bring Dubas back. That was the plan. He didn't want him to speak on Monday, like you said. When Dubas spoke on Monday, he spoke about the toll. He's only 37 years old. He's got a young family, young kids. The pressure of that job, the fact you're never home, it's got to be harder on his wife and his kids than it is on him. And he spoke about that on Monday. And Shanahan obviously thought, wow, maybe, you know, this job is eating him up. Maybe he's burned out. Maybe I need to look in another way and let him go spend some time with his family. But then it seemed they figured that part out. And I figured the Dubas decided he wanted to come back. He thought about it. And they seemed to have a contract agreed to. And then the agent upped the ante, it seems like, from what was said today. And that's when Shanahan said, okay, this is enough. I got to go in another direction. But it was a really bizarre news conference today with Shanahan sort of going day by day about how he wanted Dubas to come back. I mean, his choice was to bring him back. He thought he had done a good enough job to come back with the Leafs next season. And then whatever as you said, he didn't want Dubas to speak with the media on Monday. He did. And then I guess Shanahan, listening to it, realized that, wow, this guy's having a tougher time away from the arena, away from the work, than I thought he was, and maybe it is time. But again, it was really a bizarre situation today.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the Leafs are looking for a new GM.
Stu, I don't know if I got the wrong read on this, but listening to Shanahan, I almost get the feeling that the negotiation, a la Marc Bergevin, Andre Markov, a la Marc Bergevin, Radulov, got personal at one point.
It
ticked him off, and he was trying to be as diplomatic and as professional and as cordial as possible during the press conference. But it almost seemed like it ticked Shanahan off because he thought Dubas and his agent were playing him.
It seems that way. And Dubas and Shanahan have worked together for a long time. And Dubas was his guy. I mean, he ran Lou Lamoriello out of Toronto to make room for Dubas in that position. And then it seems, and speculating from what he said today, it seemed like he thought they had a deal. They thought everything was worked out. And then the agent called back and wanted more. And Shanahan was probably, again, I'm just guessing, upset that Dubas didn't talk to him himself, maybe, and didn't just try and... They went to the agent, and the agent came back for more. And Shanahan, at that point, as I said, I think he said, okay, enough's enough. This is gone more than, you know, I had my questions, my doubts after what he said Monday about, you know, his personal life and maybe being burnt out and taking too much of a toll. And now he's pulling this. It's like, okay, enough. I got to go in a different direction. But I mean, he was Shanahan's guy. I mean, the Shanahan plan, Dubas was a huge part of it. And today, I guess maybe Dubas just played his hand too much and tried to get too much out of Shanahan. And Shanahan decided, you know what? I don't need this. It's time to go in a different direction. And the Leafs are headed in a different direction now.
It it seemed like Shanahan got the feeling that there was a chance that Dubas was using the Leafs.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
To probably get the framework for a bigger contract to either accept that contract, or if he doesn't accept it, to be able to take that contract to show other teams and say, look what the Leafs were offering us.
Well, what's going to be interesting now, Tony, is that Dubas had said Monday at his news conference that he was either going to be back with the Leafs next season or he wasn't going to be back anyway. Now I wonder about that. I wonder now the way things blew up in his face here, or seemed to blow up in his face here, if now maybe he's looking for another job somewhere else that wouldn't have the same pressure on his family. You know, if you're GM in Carolina or one of those cities, it's not the same as being GM in Toronto or Montreal. You could probably go for dinner in Carolina's GM there and nobody knows who you are. I'm not saying he's going to be GM in Carolina. I'm just throwing that team out there. High pressure job, not just for him, but for his family. And now I wonder, I wouldn't be surprised if Dubas is back as a GM somewhere else.
Well, you know what, Stu, great point you bring up. And I almost think that he can't take another job. Like, if he takes another job now, I mean, he loses face because everyone knows he was bluffing. And at the end of the day, he might not care because staying home is going to pay you nothing. And taking a job like that is probably going to pay you about $5 million a year. So I get it. But I think he was bluffing. And I think Shanahan called this bluff and said, oh, yeah, you want to play cards? Guess what? Royal flush.
It's possible. Or maybe Dubas will take a year off now and spend some time with his family and then decide where he wants to go. I mean, I'm sure he's made enough money over the last 2 years to the Leafs. It's not like he needs a paycheck next week to survive. But that's, to me, moving forward, that's the two things that would be interesting are obviously who are the Leafs going to hire now as a GM? And secondly, is Dubas going to end up somewhere else? I mean, there's jobs open. The Calgary job's open. Pittsburgh's open. You know, Mark Bergevin's name's been thrown out as possibilities for those places. The thing with Dubas, though, I mean, the Leafs, he built an incredible regular season team. I mean, Dubas is a huge analytics guy. And I'm not anti-analytics, but they're not the be-all and end-all. And I think with the Leafs, in a lot of ways, they were. And the analytics that he based this team on worked really well in the regular season. But they didn't work so well in the playoffs. You know, as Joel Edmondson told me this season, he said, you know, the playoffs in the are the NHL on steroids. It's a different game. You got to be ready to be hit. You got to be ready to hit. And the core four with the Leafs don't seem to like to get hit that much, and they don't seem to like to hit other people that much. And in the playoffs, that's not a good recipe to win. So the analytics approach that Dubas took in building the Leafs, again, it worked really, you know, they're weak on goaltending. They're weak on defense. They put all their money into offensive guys that could produce. And then when they don't produce in the playoffs, we saw what happened. So it'll be interesting to see. Shanahan said today that he'd like to get an experienced GM to replace Dubas. So maybe that's taking a different look and maybe not focusing so much on analytics like Dubas did. But again, I imagine there will be other teams interested in hiring Dubas. But I get, I have a feeling you'll probably end up somewhere else next season. That's just a gut feeling I have right now.
Well, we'll continue this conversation a little bit later on with Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star, who just got back to me. Looks like he's going to call in a little bit later, probably in about 20 minutes from now. He'll give us a call, and he'll tell us if he thinks Kyle Dubas ends up somewhere else, and we'll talk about who he thinks will be the next general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. In the meantime, Stu, have you been following the situation with Clayton Keller's father?
Yes, the tweets, yes. Okay, I did, yeah. So, now he's saying his account was hacked and it wasn't him.
So there were, you know, he basically let it be known that his son was not going to be playing in Arizona next year. And there was a lot of talk about it. By the way, his agents went on Phoenix Sports podcast and said that, you know, Clayton had a great year. He's a very ambitious player who obviously wants to know where he's playing next year, which arena he's playing in next year, wants to have a very competitive team going forward. And so they had to meet with the ownership group and the management team to get a little bit more clarity and certain assurances on what's going on. So following up on what the father said, it certainly looks like it was the father because...
Yeah,
or someone in the family, because the agents were picking up on that and basically saying, hey, we need to meet with the team because, you know, Clayton doesn't want to rot here, basically.
Why would anybody want to play in Arizona right now, apart from the nice weather? Yeah, why would anybody want to play for that team?
Yeah, if your goal is to win a Stanley Cup, you don't.
Well, or, I mean, what NHL player wants to play in a 5,000-seat arena? You know, I was there when the Canadiens played Arizona this season, and you know, it's a great place to watch a game because it's... It was certainly, you know, I covered the two Kraft Hockeyville games this year in Gander and Buchtush, and covering the game in Arizona was the same thing. It was like a little community rink with an NHL game going on. It's only 5,000 seats. It's, you know, the Canadiens locker room, you have to go outside the arena and literally walk outside to get to the visitors' locker room. It's a joke. Like, it's not an NHL, not even close to. I mean, there's junior teams that have better facilities than them. And so it's not, I mean, why would anybody want to play for that team right now?
All right.
But, so it doesn't surprise me what happened.
So long story short, his father then tweeted out Wednesday morning while out of town on business. I was informed by several friends, a couple of Twitter messages were apparently sent from my personal account regarding the vote on the proposed arena in Tempe and my son, Clayton Keller's future in Arizona. I'm writing to inform anyone who read those messages that my Twitter account was hacked and the messages were sent out by the hacker. I want to make it clear that I did not authorize these messages and they do not reflect my personal views or opinions. Okay.
Well, from what I've heard, if your account gets hacked, if your Twitter account gets hacked, it's not like you get it back the next day. You know, it takes a while before, Twitter gets around to fixing the issues or everything's cleared up and you get your account back. So
yeah. This matter has been reported and my account is now secure. Everyone who knows me knows my opinions are all mine and I own them. These were not my comments or views on that matter. I want to apologize for any confusion this caused anyone. Mm-hmm. You know, this, it could be that he's hacked or it could be that somebody else in the family used his account, which is still hacking.
Yeah.
Or it could be that his son said, Dad, you're really not doing me any favors here. You're better off shutting it. Or the agent told Clayton, what the hell is your father doing, man? Let us handle it and tell your father to be quiet.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. Late night tweeting could get people. I'm not sure what time he tweeted that out at, but... can get you in trouble, put it that way.
Yeah It's wow. All right, okay, so that's it's pretty crazy. The Quebec Ramparts, by the way, fall to the Halifax Mooseheads by a score of 3-2. So if you were looking for them to win the championship tonight, it did not happen tonight. All right,
I'll tell you a quick Arizona story. Well, I remember Tony, when I was there, I went for lunch. There's a sports bar not far from the Mullet Arena, which is in the shadow of the like 70,000 seat Arizona State University football stadium. So I went for lunch and I was sitting at the bar and I was having a bite to eat. And I was talking with a young woman working behind the bar and, you know, she said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Montreal. She said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm here to cover the hockey game. So, oh yeah, that's right. We got the hockey team here. We got the, like, it's, this is in a sports bar, right? Wow. Like, we have the we have the hockey team here. I should go to a game one of these nights.
This has been an epic fail, Stu. Gary Bettman doesn't want to admit it. And you know why?
Arizona don't care about hockey. It's as simple as that.
Gary Bettman's done a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of good things for the Montreal Canadiens, for the National Hockey League, pardon me, not for the Montreal Canadiens, for the National Hockey League and for the owners. But he's failed with the whole Arizona situation. He has failed, and he's failed miserably. And it's like he doesn't want to admit that it's an epic fail. Yeah. And the more he tries to just try and make it work out, the deeper it gets.
He seemed certain that the vote was going to go through and they were going to get the new arena. But it's, you know, it's a little bit similar to if the Expos coming back here, would people in Montreal vote for taxpayer money to build a baseball stadium for the Expos? I don't think so. I don't think there's enough hardcore baseball fans in Montreal to vote for something like that. And in Arizona, it's the same thing with hockey. There's not enough people who care about hockey. The arena where they were in Glendale, and I've covered games there too. It's a beautiful arena. It's a beautiful complex built around it. There's lots of bars and restaurants, things to do before and after the games. It's right beside where the NFL stadium is. And they couldn't get anybody to go there either. So I always thought, when I was at the Canadiens game, it was a 5,000-seat arena. I think attendance was 4,600. It wasn't even sold out with 5,000 people with the Canadiens in town. And then they think they're going to build an 18,000-seat arena, and all of a sudden they're going to sell 18,000 seats a game for hockey. It just makes no sense. It's made no sense for a long time to anybody except Gary Bettman.
Yeah. Cole Caulfield, Chris Weidman went on the Cam and Strick podcast. And he said, Cole Caulfield's more than just a goal scorer. What we missed most was his enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. He pulls you into the fight. I love that saying, by the way. He pulls you into the fight.
Well, Brendan Gallagher, people have said that about Brendan Gallagher, and it is similar with Caulfield. And when he went out, Marty St. Louis even said, he says, we're not just going to have to replace his goals. We're going to have to replace the enthusiasm that he brings to the rink every day. And, you know, watching practices this season, when Caulfield, after he was hurt, he was on the bench and he was hooting and hollering and really still involved. The kid just loves showing up at the rink every day. He loves everything about being a hockey player. He loves everything about playing for the Canadiens. He's always having a good time, so he never has a bad day. And it rubs off on his teammates. And there's another example of that, what you were just saying.
They haven't signed the deal yet. We know that they will at some point. This is the art of negotiation, right? You got two mm-hmm. people who are very good at it. Pat Brisson represents Cole Caulfield, is great at it. Kent Hughes, who's a former agent himself, is great at it. And when you have both of them that are great at it, it either gets solved in a week and done in a week, or it might get done in 6 months.
Yeah.
There's probably no in between. Are you at all concerned that there could be an offer sheet?
There's a little concern right now, I would say. The other thing is you know, Pat Brisson is Caulfield's agent. He's also Trevor Zegras's agent. He needs a contract too. So he might be sort of playing the two of them together, trying to get similar type of deals. But, you know, I wrote a column earlier today that's on Hockey Inside Out. And the guys who were drafted the same year as Caulfield, 2019, and I've had similar sort of numbers, have signed $7 million a year contracts. So to me, it makes sense with Caulfield that he'd be somewhere in that $7 million range. I can't see the Canadiens giving him more than what they're paying Nick Suzuki, which I believe is like $7.8 million a year. So a $7 million contract seems to make sense. The thing is, if Cole Caulfield, 2 years, let's say he signs a seven-year contract for $7 million, and 2 years from now he scores 50 goals, he's going to be way underpaid. So that might factor in a little bit to his thinking and his agent's thinking. And the Canadian's thinking is, if we give him all that money, he hasn't really played a full season in the NHL. He's coming off shoulder surgery. He's a little guy. He might get hurt again. So there's a lot of different things going on here. And as I wrote in the column I wrote this afternoon, you wonder if Caulfield and his agent might want to take the PK Subban route when Subban's entry-level deal landed and he wanted to be paid about $7 million a year, I think it was back then. Yeah. He wanted Drew Doughty type of money, and Bergevin wasn't willing to give it to him, so he signed a two-year bridge deal, won the Norris Trophy, and they got $9 million a year. So I think you know, I think Caulfield wants to play in Montreal. He said he wants to play in Montreal. He likes the spotlight here. He handles it really well. He's fantastic dealing with fans. He's fantastic dealing with the media. He seems to enjoy the spotlight. The Canadians want him here long term, but it's a case of dollars and cents and how many dollars the Canadians are willing to give him. But again, to me, the $7 million mark seems to be make sense for a lot of reasons right now. But the term might be an issue with on both sides. The Canadians might be a little bit concerned that they want to lock him up for 7 years and risk the injury again. It might be a thing for Caulfield. Do I want to lock up for that much when I can get more money later? So I think it will get settled. But the longer it drags on, the bigger the possibility becomes of what happened with Kotkaniemi with another team coming in with an offer sheet.
Yeah, that Subban bridge deal, by the way, was a little bit particular because in the first year of that two-year bridge, his cap hit was 3.109375. And in the second year, it was 2.763889. So long story short, about 3.1 million year one and about 2.8 million year two. And because the player signed after the season started as an RFA, that's why the cap hit and the AAV is different, which usually you don't see a lot of that. At least I don't think so anyway.
Well, he held out. He missed the start of the season too before he signed the contract.
Yeah.
And that's another possibility with Caulfield moving forward.
Yeah, because I think it was Vinny Danfous that said on television that, you know what, he's got to sign the contract or else, I don't quite remember what he said. He said he's got to sign the contract, because he basically said, well, he's got no power or something. I believe I read something like that. You know, if I'm off here, but yeah. I believe I read he's got no power or whatever. He can, like you just said, he can stay home.
Yeah.
He can stay home. Now, it's not going to help us if he does, but could you imagine if he decides to stay home, the Canadians to their fan base saying, you know what? Cole Caulfield decided to stay home. I mean, the Canadians, they're gonna lose that. From a PR perspective, they'll lose that battle.
Well, they lost it with Pique. I mean, as I wrote in the column I wrote today, Caulfield, you know, take with the exception of Carey Price, is the most popular player the Canadians have had since Pique, and the most exciting player they've had since Pique. And now he finds himself in a similar situation to what Pique was in after his entry level deal ended. But again, you know, the thing with Cole. No, he hasn't played a full NHL season. He hasn't played a full 82-game NHL season. And the concern maybe from the Canadian standpoint is can he hold up physically through an 82-game season? And he couldn't last season. He had the shoulder injury. And, you know, we've read stories about him having to pop the shoulder back in once and then it happened a second time and then they made him sit out. But, you know, when he agreed to sit out or when the decision was made from the sit out, I figured at the time a contract was probably more or less set. For both sides to agree, okay, the best thing for him to do now is to sit out and get the operation. He was on pace for 46 goals. If he keeps playing and he gets that 46 or hits 50, he's worth a lot more money. So if the Canadians wanted him to get the operation so he'd be ready to start next season, the agent would be saying, well, we want him to play because we want to see how many more goals. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on here. And that's why I thought when he had the operation, I thought the contract was probably more or less settled. So that's why it's a little concerning, I think, right now that it hasn't been announced. I thought the Canadians would announce it about a month ago when they cleared out their lockers for the last time. It would have been a nice way to sort of tie a bow on the ribbon to wrap up the season. You know, we didn't make the playoffs for the second year in a row, but you know, we've had some improvements. Fans are still happy with the team and the progress. And by the way, we've signed Cole Caulfield to a new 7-year contract or whoever it might be. And that didn't happen. And I know when Cole met with the media that day and Herb Zerkowski asked him the first question, so do you have a new contract? And he went, nope. And it was a very disappointing sort of, it wasn't like, no, I don't. It was like, nope. So there was a sense of disappointment in his voice that at that time he didn't have a contract.
Disappointment and attitude.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit of attitude. A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong. You don't become the type of player Cole Caulfield is or PK Subban was without having a little bit of swagger and a little bit of attitude.
Hey, did you see the goal that Joel Armia scored at the World Hockey Championships versus Hungary?
Yeah, he's made for the world championships, that guy. It's crazy.
You know, but this guy does stuff sometimes, and fortunately for him, he just does them every 20 games.
Tony, I watch the Habs practice, well, every day when they're at home in Montreal. Yeah. And I watch this guy and the skill he has and the shot he has and the way he can skate and the way he can protect the puck. You watch him at practice and you go, oh, my God, how does this guy not score 35 goals every year? He is – I can't imagine how frustrating he must be to watch – for a GM or a coach or even, I'm sure, some of his teammates. Because as a journalist watching him, it's frustrating to watch. I mean, he should be a superstar player or a star player in the NHL anyways. He has all the gifts in the world, and he just doesn't seem to be able to put it together. I think I've said this to you before. I mean, he's a man of very few words. He's a horrible interviewer. He doesn't like being interviewed. He's very shy, very quiet, and he plays hockey like a very shy, quiet guy also, which isn't a good thing.
Yeah. We're going to go to Kevin McGran in a couple of minutes. We'll go to him in a couple of minutes. Just finishing off here on the Montreal Canadiens, who else do you have your eye on at the World Hockey Championships?
Well, Hudson, I mean, and Sam Montembeau.
Yeah.
If I
would have told you a year ago that Montembeau is going to be playing, and listen, I told this to George Larac yesterday, and he said, well, Tony, no one wants to go to the World Hockey Championships usually. But still, regardless, if I would have told you a year ago that whoever was going to be coaching Canada at the World Hockey Championships would be happy to have Samuel Montembeau as his goalie, you would have thought, what exactly? Because I wouldn't have bet on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was one of the brightest, if not the brightest spot for the Canes this season. He, you know, the year before he played through that painful wrist injury on his blocker side. Every time he made a save with the blocker, it hurt, but the Habs needed him to keep playing because they didn't really have anybody else. And, he went through it. He was rewarded with the two-year, $2 million contract. But he's got, he's another guy that Kent Hughes has to sign now in the offseason. I would have been surprised. It's funny that you mentioned about nobody wants to play at the World Juniors. Mike Johnson, I heard him talking a couple of weeks ago, saying that he was invited to go play for Team Canada like four or five times. He only went once, and in hindsight, he regrets it. He said it was an amazing experience. He should have gone more often. He said anybody who's asked should go. It's good to see Montembeau did go. I think it'll be a nice way for him to finish up the season. Justin Barron's there also. So it's one of those things. I think it's a nice way for guys to end the season because you travel there, you're in the same spot for the whole tournament. It's not like you're playing games every night in different arenas. Get to meet some different players from around the league, different coaches, new systems. I think this will be a really good experience for Montembeau, and it'll be interesting to see how he can carry it over into next season. Might give him a comment if Canada can go a long way and maybe win a gold medal or a silver medal. It could give him a real confidence boost coming into training camp next season. But again, he has to be signed to a contract also.
Stu, thanks so much for doing this again the way you usually do it on Friday nights. Much appreciated. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too, Tony.
All right, enjoy your pool. All right, there you have it, Stu Cowan. We bring in from the Toronto Star. He's going to do it by phone. We very much appreciate him doing this on this short notice. He's one of the best. Kevin McGran, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, Tony. What's going on?
Hey, Stu Cowan and I from the Montreal Gazette, we were talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs situation earlier today. I mean, we found it very telling when Kyle Dubas said what he said at the year-end presser, that he didn't even know if he was going to be back as the Toronto Maple Leafs general manager, but if he wasn't going to be a GM in the National Hockey League for the next season. At that point, he would take a sabbatical. He just found it very taxing on him and on his family. But we didn't expect a couple of days later for there to be an announcement at 12:22 p.m. on the Leafs Twitter account that Kyle Dubas was relieved of his duties as general manager, and Brendan Shanahan called a 3 p.m. presser. And there's so much that came out of that presser, but there's a couple of tweets that I liked. One from Frank Saravalli of the Daily Faceoff, who said, after Dubas's press conference against Shanahan's wishes, Shanahan had a shift in thinking. And when Dubas's agent presented a new financial package, Shanahan said he got to a different place. There's one that pretty much sums it up. There's another one that I think was interesting from Sid Sixero, who said, Kyle Dubas timeline, Leafs eliminated, Shanahan still ready to offer Dubas a deal, Dubas has his press conference. Shanahan looks at Dubas differently thereafter. Dubas agent makes a counteroffer. Dubas fired. And that's well said as well. What did you make of this presser? What did you make of this announcement, Kevin?
So I'm really, to be quite honest with you, I'm still trying to digest it all. I like Kyle Dubas an awful lot. I think he's going to get a job in hockey. He could walk into one tomorrow if he so wanted. I know he said that the Leafs are nowhere else, but you know, something tells me that he'll think better of that and he'll land somewhere sooner. As soon as he wants to, he will get a job in hockey. I think he's a brilliant mind. I think any team would be lucky to have him. So when you hear about, you know, when you saw the emotions of that day on Monday, when he talked about what this job had done to his family and all of the, you know, he looked burnt out. He really did. And he looked like his family was taking the brunt of everything, and he wanted to protect them. And you really, really felt something for him. If, you know, no matter what you thought of him as a general manager, you felt something for him and what he was going through in that moment. Then you go through the timeline that Brendan Shanahan went through, where he saw that too. He felt that too. And he started to think of Kyle Dubas in a different manner. Basically, you're kind of reading at that point, is Kyle Dubas all in as general manager? And then you get to, you know, the Shanahan timeline, where everything was copacetic until Monday. Like, there was an offer on the table. Everything that the agent had asked for, Shanahan was complying with. Dubas sort of puts off accepting the offer. And by Thursday, the Dubas camp has come up with a brand new offer. So that tells me the family was fine with Dubas continuing in the role. Dubas just wanted more money and more power. And Shanahan said no. Because when is the last time anybody at MLSE has ever said that's too much money? No. No one's ever said that at MLSE before. And suddenly they're doing it. So there's something, there's kind of a lot more. I'm surmising. I mean, it's educated guesses. It's talking to people. But there's still a lot that we don't know. Certainly, Kyle has not given his side of the story. I think obviously he was looking for more money. He was looking for somewhere in the Shanahan money. He was looking for more power, Shanahan power. You know, there's rumors of a rift between the two, that things were not necessarily as copacetic as they presented. I know.
Yeah.
Each year as general manager, he sat and watched the game mostly with Brendan Shanahan, but not this year. He sat in the press box again. In the leaf box behind the media.
With Jason Spezza, who, by the way, handed his resignation earlier today
and
as well.
When Jason Spezza, who bleeds blue and white, hands in his resignation, that tells you there's a lot going on. I'm here with a couple of writers. It's the Friday night after. Now it feels like the season is finally over because we have some closure, and the next season is about to begin because we have a lot of questions. And it's like we kind of agree the circus is back in Toronto.
Like, yeah. You know, this is what it felt like.
Collected for a few years, but now it's now that, can I swear on your show now?
Yes, you can. It's a podcast. Uncensored. Say whatever you want.
We're looking forward to the shit show, basically.
I hear you, bud. And thank you for doing that, by the way. We appreciate it. Listen, my interpretation of everything we heard today is that I thought Shanahan tried to make it as diplomatic and as professional as possible, but I got the feeling that he was ticked off with Dubas. I have a feeling that he thought that Dubas and or his agent were playing him either for leverage or whatever. He didn't think it was cool. And it was like he went to bed last night and he said, these guys are playing me. Screw them. And he woke up this morning and he said, pack your stuff. You're fired. By the way, Tim Peel.
Go ahead. If I had to pick which one of these guys I would have to run my franchise, I would probably pick Dubas. Both are sort of standoffish. They're not really, you know, media friendly kind of guys. I mean, they'll always smile and laugh and have a few jokes, but they like to keep their distance. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But my respect level for Brendan Shanahan went up a ton during that news conference because I thought he handled it really, really well. I mean, you don't see people laying it all out. And presumably it's all out. Like, I don't know, he might have tweaked it to make himself look good or the organization look good. But it was a really, really forthright news conference where he sort of laid out everything that was going on in his mind. And
yeah,
you often don't see that, right? They in hockey in particular.
No, but Kevin, you know why I think you saw it? I think you saw it because I think he was being brutally honest, because that's the way it played itself out. So he was very fluid in talking about it because he didn't have to lie about it, because that's the way it was. I think he believes that Dubas and his agent did not handle this whole situation well. I believe he thinks that he did. And the Leafs did, and he's like, you know what? I'm just going to lay it all on the line. I'm going to let everyone know about it, and then I'll let others judge. And that's it.
Yeah, and that's why my respect level, as I said, for Brendan Shanahan went up a great amount today, because I just thought both press conferences were honest. Like, they were, you could see the raw emotion. You saw it more with Kyle Dubas.
Yeah.
Brendan was a little bit more controlled, but I can see why you interpret it the way you do. Like, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. You're probably right. But it's been a week of amazing theater, right? Like, because no one saw what Dubas had to say coming on Monday. And by Thursday, it's a completely different conclusion. It wasn't the family at all. It was a breakdown in money, and contract talks, and power, and all of that. Like, it was... It's an opera. It's a soap opera. And we haven't seen that in Toronto in a long, long time. We've seen Edmonton sort of implode and Vancouver implode, and maybe Calgary a little bit. But in Toronto, it's largely been under control in Shanahan's era. And now it isn't. Now it's sort of a little bit out of control, especially when Jason Spezza hands in his resignation. It's like, now what's happening? And for me, like, I asked the question, who are you looking for in another general manager? And I wasn't expecting necessarily the answer that I got, because he said he wants somebody with experience.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of drops my jaw, because it's the most sense is to move Brandon Pridham into the general manager's chair, keep some continuity, keep all those relationships intact that you have with your players and their families and their agents, because Brandon Pridham is really the guy that handles all of that.
Okay.
And now you're like, you say you're going to rely on him while you look for someone with more experience?
Yeah. But let me ask you this.
Bleeding blue and white and making all of these amazing moves that kept them under the cap and kept them competitive?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that was, it's like a whole other area. Like, where this team goes from here forward is that's, and they have such little time to get it all
sorted
out. Like, the GM's got to come in and he's got to figure out. He's got like 6 weeks. If they hired him on Monday, he'd have 6 weeks to figure out whether he's going to trade or keep Matthews and Marner.
Kevin, when Shanahan chose Kyle Dubas, didn't he choose Kyle Dubas over Mark Hunter?
Yes, and over Lou Lamoriello, which is really hard.
Well,
right?
Lou's not going anywhere, but any chance that Shanahan goes back to Mark Hunter?
I don't think anybody that's been here before has a chance of coming back. I think once they move on from you, they move on from you. I love Mark Hunter. I still have a relationship with him, and I hear he's actually in line for the job in Calgary, and that I think that would be a great fit for him. But I don't think any organization moves forwards by going backwards, even as good of a talent spotter as Mark Hunter is. I think they're gonna go forward. I have a few names. I mean, we've heard veteran names like we kind of think Sheldon Keefe is probably done as a coach. So what better combo to come in than Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville, try to reproduce the luck they had with Chicago for a few years. I know they have their sins to atone for, but I think they've atoned. And if Shanahan tells Gary Bettman he wants them, I don't think the commissioner is going to stand in the way of a former loyal employee and the guy that basically turned the tide towards the owners in the 2005 lockout. He's not going to turn back on Brandon Shanahan.
This guy is the most opinionated, outspoken official in the history of the National Hockey League. I'm talking about Tim Peel. You probably didn't see this because, like you said, you're having a pint with the boys, so I won't keep you much longer, maybe one or two more minutes here. But he tweeted out, Tim Peel did, okay, can we please stop with the Toronto media making Kyle Dubas out to be this GM guru? He won one round in 5 years. Mark Bergevin and Scott Mellenby had way more success. This is ridiculous. And then he hashtags Leafs Forever and Hockey Twitter and Go Habs Go.
Well, I'll put it this way. So I've been covering this team a long time, and I went a stretch of 11 or 12 years where they made the playoffs exactly one time. Now they're on a run of seven, and I know they should have done better against Columbus, and they should not have lost to Montreal. Sorry about your fans there, but there's no way they should have lost to Montreal in 2021. Coin flips kind of the rest of the way, and they won the coin flip against Tampa, and then they, you know, ran into a hot goalie. Like, this team is better than its record indicates in terms of the playoffs. Regular season, like, you can run these guys back, add, you know, I think they need 8 or 10 free agents to come in at about $15 or $17 million. Okay, get those guys, and the core that's here will get you 105 points, and you're back in the playoffs, and you're flipping a coin again in a year's time. So I actually don't mind that. I'm sort of a glass half full sort of guy, because I covered way too many years where the playoffs were nothing but a dream. And, you know, this year they were one of the last 8 teams to play. That's hard, right? That is hard.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't happen. And so I get the frustration from the fan base that they haven't won more than a round, you know, like I certainly haven't won the Stanley Cup in 56 years. That seems like a pipe dream. But at the same time, you got to be in the playoffs. You got to have a ticket to win it. And they can punch that ticket pretty easily by just running it all back and hoping to win the coin flip. Because when you watch any of the playoff games, they're one goal games. Like, do you hit the post, or does it just pick the corner? Does the goalie get a stick on it? Does it go off a skate? That's what it comes down to in the playoffs. It's kind of ridiculous. But that's essentially what it is. It's like a randomizer. It's like ping pong balls out of the thing. Who's getting Connor Bedard? Who's winning tonight?
Yeah.
Numbers up, you win.
In ending, what would you say if the Leafs hired Mark Bergevin as general manager?
I think I like Mark. I've dealt with him a little bit over the years. I think he's a smart guy. He knew in that COVID year that if he put a roster together, they could go somewhere, and he managed to get that roster together. Like, I thought, I mean, I never fully understood why Montreal traded away Tyler Toffoli, because he's a hell of a player and they'd be a much better team with him. But he brought in the guys that helped that team win that year. And I think he's smart. I think he sees a bigger picture, and I'd be all for it if Mark Bergevin was in.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time. I mean, you were having a pint with your buddies and I took you away. Very much appreciate it, Kevin. I hope you're doing well. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Tony. We'll talk to you again. Cheers.
All right. There you have it. Kevin McGrath of the Toronto Star. All right. Okay. Pretty cool. Hey, today was a big day because Jean-Charles Lajoie and I, and I mentioned that I'm Jean-Charles' radio show as a collaborator on BPM Sports Monday to Friday at around 8:05 a.m. en français, in French. And also collaborator on his TV show, GEC at TVA Sports, Monday to Thursday at around 5:30 p.m. And it was back on March 27th that we basically threw a challenge out to each other, and it was to get our weight down. And, I had promised to lose 25 plus. Jean-Charles had promised to lose 21 pounds plus. And so today was the day that we had to get on the scale, and mission accomplished for me. I have lost 30 pounds even. So today the scale was 30 pounds less than it was back on March 27th. So I'm pretty happy about that. But as for Jean-Charles, he was 258.4. So the scale needed to show 237.4. But before we get to him getting on the scale, because I'd love to show you, I thought it was pretty comedic stuff that we did today. I thought it was pretty good. As I just sneezed. All right, okay. I probably lost another pound, hopefully. As I made my way into studio, he was exercising to try and lose some pounds. I was exercising, and then at one point, as we were we bumped into each other, and then a scrap broke out. I don't even know. Do we have the scrap? Oh, look at this. Look at this. Look at this, folks. Tell me what you think. You could tell Chris Nyland was one of my favorite players growing up, eh? There comes his glasses come off. I grab his hand. There we go. Look at that. Oh, there we go. There we go. There we go. Got the hoodie. Look at that. 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 And then as he tries to come back, watch this. I sweep the leg. Watch my right foot. Boom. Oh, man. One, two, three. It's over. That's it. He's out. So that was it. It set the tone. I make weight, no problem. And then he's got to go on the scale, and it's got to hit 237.4. Let's take a look. He had to take off his boxers because he was over. He had to go to 237.4. There we go. So he failed to realize his objective, his goal, by 0.6. He failed to hit it by 0.6. And according to him, he was under the 237.4 yesterday afternoon, but he had a night last night where he ate the wrong things, and he probably had an alcoholic beverage or two, and he ended up going just over. So the bet was, if you don't hit your objective, you have to be in your boxers at the end of the show on Friday, May 26th at 9 a.m., and you have to run down Laurier Street. I don't know how much of Laurier he's going to run down. I'd actually like for him to run around Laurier and St. Viateur all around. I'd like for him to be able to do like at least a kilometer of running. So I don't know how much running he's going to do, but it's going to take place on Friday, May 26th at 9 a.m. You know, I obviously wanted, you know, every time a challenge is issued, you want to come out on top. So I wanted to win this. And I obviously wanted him to lose it so I can see him run around in his boxers. But unfortunately, Jean-Charles doesn't know some of the people I know, because if it would have been me in the last day and you need to cut weight, I'd give my friend Luigi Melli a call. And Jean-Charles should have called Luigi Melli, and I bring him up, of LTC Nutrition and Performance. And I wanted to give him a shout-out because he is, as you can tell there by the bio, he's helping athletes reach their full potential, fight camp, custom meal plans, and weight cuts to achieve peak performance. When it comes to weight cuts, this guy is a guru. He's an expert, so much so that he obviously caught the attention of the MMA world, and they've reached out to him, and several fighters have talked to him, and several coaches have talked to him and used his services in terms of, one day before or 2 days before or 3 days before, I need to cut weight. And you know what? What do I do? Luigi Melli is the guy that they go to in terms of cutting weight, like with a day to go, 2 days to go, or 3 days to go. He's got all the little tricks and stuff like that where you can cut within a day or two. So Jean-Charles, next time, you know, you want to do some kind of contest like this, you got to think of Luigi, LTC, Nutrition and Performance. And if he's good enough for the MMA world and he's good enough for the boxing world, he should have been good enough in your world. Now you know, and now you can use his services, and now it's okay because I won my bet, I won my challenge, and you lost the bet, and you lost your challenge. I look forward to seeing him run around the block on Friday, May 26th at 9 a.m. I look forward to seeing that. Why don't we bring in Aniello and Sammy? Got a couple of minutes to go here. We don't have to go a couple of minutes, but what's going on?
What's going on?
Huh? Hey, what did you think of tucking the shirt over the head. At one point, I put the garbage bag in front of his face. Then I put the hoodie over his head. Then I started wailing away. Then I sweeped the leg.
You definitely have a gig in WWE, that's for sure.
I told you, I'm from the streets.
Yeah.
In LaSalle, you have to learn how to fight when you're five.
No, you should.
This is not the West Island here. This is not Kirkland, where you're from, where you don't have to learn how to fight growing up.
You got to find your gig with WWE. We got to make some calls.
You know what?
Yep.
It's great for Logan Paul.
Yep.
Who also has a podcast.
McAfee always wells.
By the way, I enjoy Logan Paul's podcast very much.
I don't really watch his.
No?
No,
I like Logan Paul's podcast. I obviously like Pat McAfee's podcast. It's very, very good.
McAfee a lot.
Yep. Yeah. You know, and those are two guys that have competed in the WWE.
Yeah, that's why you're next.
But I can't do that. I mean, it's one thing to throw a few punches, and I know you're kidding, obviously. I know you're being sarcastic, but it's one thing to throw a few fake punches. It's another thing. WWE, tremendous athletes.
What they do is crazy.
Tremendous athletes. You know what? I think what Logan Paul does is crazy.
Yep.
Logan Paul, his athleticism has blown me away.
No.
And by the way, Jake Paul too. I'm not going to say a great boxer, but he's really surprised me. And he's got a knockout punch. And I saw some video highlights of him in training a couple of weeks ago. As he prefers, I think he prepares to fight Nate Diaz, right? Is it Nate or Nick or whatever? Anyway, he's prepared to fight one of the Diaz brothers. But he looks really good, Jake Paul.
Well, think of it. They went from YouTube stars to that. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable what they did.
My God, the money they've made, eh?
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah,
what are the chances of us becoming YouTube stars and making that kind of money?
You are a star already.
Eh, Mozitumo.
You are.
No, listen, you know what a star is? They got their own jet, man.
Yeah, that's all we're missing. We need to get a jet.
You know, I got a 2012 truck, and it's been in the body shop for the last 2 weeks. I mean, they got their own jet, you know, and I haven't been able to replace it.
So do you
get their own jet?
Listen, do you think if we start a GoFundMe page, we'll raise enough money for a jet?
No, we don't need to do that. We don't need to do that. Hey, you have a good weekend, okay, bud?
Thank you, man.
Are we going to see each other this weekend or what?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Yep.
What's the weather like tomorrow?
I think it's raining tomorrow.
No. Yep. Your pool open yet?
It's getting there.
It's getting there?
Yeah.
By next week?
Next week.
All right. I'll be invited.
I put a lock on the door.
All right. Raniello and Sammy. They're Cavallaro. And the Sick Podcast brought to you in part by Labitta TV. Embrace Your True Nature. Energy Transportation Group. And XL Moto and XLMoto.com. Look at Sammy. Look at him. Always on that phone. Right now, you know what he's doing? He's buying stocks. He's buying stocks. Right now, he just pulled a $100,000 transaction. Huh? 2 years ago, Yahoo Finance, top 15 entrepreneurs under 20 in Canada, came in at number 4.
Yep.
He's the man. He's the reason why I'm doing this. And Sammy, I trust. Sammy who? Sammy Cavallaro. He's Cavallaro. I'm Marinaro. The Sick Podcast will be back Monday night, same time, same place, 10 p.m. with Eric Engels. And by the way, the owner, co-owner, minority owner of the Seattle Kraken, Mitch Garber, has already confirmed he's going to join us on Tuesday night. We're going to have some great podcasts next week. You join us. Have a great weekend. Ciao for now.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature.